Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book, In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Melissa Vivian Jefferson, 31 years old, and taking over the world. And your Bonnaroo headliner this year.
She's on a mission. She keeps making new fans, new friends.
It is remarkable how less than a year you have people who do not know who Billie Eilish is but know who Lizzo is. It's very strange.
Yeah. Or maybe vice versa. I don't know.
Well, I was watching the news this morning. They were like doing like the whole let's talk about the Grammys thing. And they said, yeah, I'm not familiar with this Billie Eilish. I'm like...
Yeah.
But the guy who was, you know, maybe your age, knew everything about Lizzo.
Yeah.
Everything you could know about Lizzo had it all.
He's probably the same one when they announced the Bonnaroo lineup. His co-host, co-anchor asked if he was going to go. And he said, I've had a DNA test and I'm 100% too old.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Okay. It was good. I was like, that's funny. That's good.
Now, of course, Lizzo, our headliner, she won three. She got three last night at the, by the way, we're doing this on a Monday. Grammy's fresh in our mind, but she gets three Grammys last night. Hardly eight and hardly the five or so that Billie Eilish got. But, you know... It's still enormously impressive for someone. Yeah, it's impressive that an 18-year-old wins, you know, a boatload of Grammys. That's impressive.
Yep.
But Lizzo was living in her car.
Oh, it's
living in her car.
It's a tremendous story, no question about it. And you and I went on and on a couple episodes ago when we announced, you know, the lineup. I think people are going to be blown away by this show. As you have impressed to me,
yeah,
because you've seen it.
You're going to throw your back out, Dad.
Yeah,
you're going to throw your back out.
I'm already doing the yoga that and the the mosh pit, the okay. Tool and the right. EDM stuff that I'm going to have to go do.
Man, you are going to be looking in shape come June 20th.
That or that Saturday morning, I'm going to be in traction.
Dead. Yeah. By the way, that's Barry Corder. I'm Brad Steiner. This is the What Podcast, a podcast for Bonnarubians by Bonnarubians. If you're listening on Spotify, on your iTunes, or any of your devices, stores, or watching this on YouTube, you can find it at the what.co or the whatpodcast.com. I know we want to spend some time on Lizzo today because, you know, she has meant, at least to me, I think that she is the perfect zeitgeist of what this festival is supposed to be. And that's what
right.
We sort of said in like the lineup behind the scenes show with the AC Entertainment guys. But more than she's just the zeitgeist of the festival, she's the zeitgeist of the entire culture right now. And, you know, what I saw in her in October of 2017 is that she was filling a part of the community,
yeah,
especially the female community, that really wasn't being served by many people.
I think certainly female, but beyond that, it's just a great story. Living in a car, you know, the body positive, she's just a happy person. Mm-hmm. And she gives off that energy.
Let me be honest with you. We're going to play a clip for you here a little bit later on the show that's going to prove how much that is so real.
Yeah.
That is the realest thing that you can imagine. And it's come from a real place with her because, you know, when she was a kid, she, you know, grew up in Detroit and then she had moved to Houston, went to University of Houston. studied classical music and learned how to play the flute, became a flautist.
Yeah.
That's it. Which, by the way, sounds so delicious. A flautist?
Yeah, I know. It sounds like it should have powdered sugar on it or something,
sounds
right?
Great, yes.
But that's, I mean, you know, we all spend too much time on YouTube watching videos, but that's a great one of her going back to her school.
University of Houston?
Yeah, and talking to those students, and I mean, that's the kind of thing, you see that and you get the sense of the energy that we're talking about, mm-hmm. and who she is and the realness, right. I mean, she's had an unbelievable year, and to see where she's come from, it's fun to me to see those kind of things.
Here's what's nuts is, like, I know you have had young children and you now have another generation of young children in your life. She was, when she was 14, she had something called the something click, the Cornrow Click. That was the name of her band when she was 14. And I always think of 14-year-olds, whenever they decide to do anything, I usually always say, good luck with that.
Yeah, right.
You'll do great.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know.
Don't believe in them for a second, because it's just so rare how it actually happens. You know, if I had a kid that was 14 and in the Cornrow Click, I don't necessarily think that I would, yeah, I don't know if she's going anywhere.
Well, that's it.
God, this is why I'm not a father, by the
that's
way.
That's right, and I'm going to sound like a father, but all you can do is sort of be supportive. I mean, I can remember both of mine saying, hey, I want a guitar, and I've been through that enough to know, don't spend a whole lot of money on a guitar.
Right.
It's reciprocal. The more you spend, the less time they're going to spend practicing.
That's a good point.
But you don't want to get one that's crap. You know, if it doesn't play, they won't play it. So probably so many parents out there have those stories of, yeah, I bought them an instrument. They wanted to be in band. Well, that lasts about a week, yeah. You know, or they lose it. You know, I forgot I left it on the bus, yeah. Or it's heavy, or, you know, whatever. So those stories for me, when you hear from an artist who said, I knew from the very beginning what I wanted to do, and by golly, they've done it. Well, like Billie Eilish. I mean, she and her brother have been doing that for 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I get it. It's just, it's hard. I don't know. Maybe it's not hard. I mean, I walked around the house when I was a kid doing nothing but a radio show.
You want to be a preacher, too.
Yeah, that's we're not talking about that story. but I thought that I was going to walk around the house just doing Dave Letterman jokes. And I was walking around just doing stand-up comedy material. And I was like, oh, if one day I could just do this on the radio, I'm going to feel okay. But that actually is a real story for somebody like Lizzo.
Yeah.
You know, she goes to college. Her dad dies, and she's got to sort of like figure it all out. And at 21, she's living in her car. She moves to Minneapolis, and then she gets in with like a trio of women, one of which is now still like one of her backup dancers. I think the other one is her DJ, if I can remember the story correctly. And then she gets the eye of Prince. And yeah. Prince finds her and gets her to collaborate on a song with some other. I actually have to figure out and ask her if she actually met Prince. I can't remember exactly if she had met Prince before. I'll have to ask her. In fact, I should have done that before this. But then, you know, she goes through struggle after struggle, and she's on the road with Harmar Superstar. Now, if you don't know Harmar, I think that Harmar has been to Bonnaroo a few times, but Harmar is a really weird, weird band. I think it's great. I think he's terrific, but is mostly up and down the Minnesota circuit, and she was just his backup singer for a very long time. And then she gets signed by Atlantic Records. She puts out an album on Virgin, but then she gets signed to Atlantic Records, and here's the crazy part. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, so please don't go too crazy with it, but she was signed for an amount of money that is, it's not an amount of money. I mean, when it comes down to this, when you hear the amount of money that most people are signed at, you know what, I probably just shouldn't say the number, but it's not an amount of money. And that's what's so crazy about it. And I think that even the label started to get nervous and not know what to do a little bit, because it just wasn't. I mean, she peaked with her first album with Atlantic on Coconut Oil at like 44 on the R&B chart, but it just couldn't she couldn't find her rhythm.
Yeah.
And then something just happened, and like she goes on the RuPaul drag show, and the audience connects with her, and she connects with that part of the country and that lifestyle. And then it all starts moving. She records Cause I Love You. She puts out Juice. And I find her in October of 2017. And this is, for you guys watching, I hope you can enjoy this, but this is her sending me a video. I played Juice for the first time in the country, and this is the video she sends me shortly thereafter. Listen to this.
Hi, Brad. Thank you so much for playing Juice. You know how lit that is? That's so special. You're going to be one of the first people ever. When this song is all over the world, you can say that you were the first that played my song. So thank you so much. That means the world to me. Thank you for helping me make all my dreams come true. You the shit.
That was October of 2017. Or 2018, I apologize. 2018. And she's like, that spirit has not changed to today.
But what do you, let me ask you, what do you think did change? You said she was, couldn't find her groove, couldn't find whatever. And that's always the thing with artists, because they got somebody in their ear so often telling them, you should do this, you know, whatever the hot thing is, go this route, go that route. For somebody of any age to find it and say, this is what I'm going to do, and then have it work. I mean, what do you think changed? Was it just the RuPaul show? She found, you know, she felt that energy coming back. Was she just mature enough all of a sudden to do what she wanted to do?
What do you think it is?
I think it's a little bit of that. I mean, I've done enough of these interviews. It always takes somebody. You know, there's how many of we artists, and I'm thinking for some reason of comedians, you know, they'll struggle for years and then they find something. Rodney Dangerfield is the classic example. You know, he was well into his, what, 40s, 50s before he hit. Artists, the ones that come out and know early on who and what they are, is pretty amazing.
But do you, but you've done this long enough to know that it also has mostly to do with luck and timing.
Absolutely. And you know, she was living in Minneapolis. I've often wondered the rarity are the bands and artists that come out of, you know, Podunk wherever, versus if you're playing in and around a Minneapolis, a New York, a Detroit, you know what good looks like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You also have a North Star in Minneapolis that just in case Prince might happen to catch wind of who you are, you better not be screwing around.
You better be good. You better up your game. And that's part of what I'm saying, too.
It's sort of like Nashville. Nashville puts the same pressure on you, right? That pressure is there in Austin. You know, it's not there, say, in Louisville.
No, and I don't remember who said it, but one of the interviews I did recently, a guy was talking about moving to Nashville from some small town and you know, drives in with all the confidence in the world and then realizes, you know, he's waiting tables and realizes, I'm not even the best guitar player at this restaurant on this staff, you know, much less. But you see that level. You see it in, you know, in sports where kids got to go play against the best in the country before they know that they're good or not, type of thing. So I don't know. I think that they see it, they rise to that level. But somebody like Lizzo, who is so unusual and so different, I mean, I guess RuPaul makes as much sense to be a role model as anybody I can think of.
It's interesting. I mean, she would point to Missy Elliott being her biggest role model because Missy was doing it in a time where not many really powerful, strong black women were able to exist.
Right.
But I'm glad that you asked that question because when she came to town, luckily after I played Juice, she came and played a free show in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I was the only person that she came and did this for. She canceled all of the shows, all the promos, all the free shows that she was going to do for this radio tour, mainly because by February, you know, some things happened. Coachella hit, you know. The Met Gala hit, and she just exploded. And somewhere around March and April, I could start to feel like the label saying, we don't know if we can make this show happen. Yeah, we've canceled everything that's not paid because they felt it moving. They felt it blowing up, and luckily she held her word. They came to Chattanooga, did a free show. She was sick as a dog. She did two songs for free in front of 350 people, and after the show, I asked her somewhat of that question. Do you want to hear the interview?
Yeah,
because
let's do it.
It might be a tad graphic.
again, that's her.
It is just so
real.
So,
yeah, be aware. So,
yeah. But here you go. This is Lizzo talking to
If you're
to
driving
me.
The kids to school, better hit
it's
the pause.
It's edited. I'll edit it. I will make sure it's friendly-ish.
Be a tough conversation.
Yeah. You'll see why. This is me and Lizzo in Chattanooga back in May.
Hi, Lizzo.
Hi.
Hi. I couldn't be more proud of you. It's quite amazing what you've been through the last few months, huh?
Oh, and yes, and shout out your Run the Jewels pin.
That's damn right.
Damn cool.
Right. Yes, right.
Run it. Okay.
You know which one that is? Which one? Who are you going with? What's your guess?
I think that's Killer Mike.
That is LP.
Okay, well, okay. I just like Killer Mike.
So. I do too, because we like Bernie. The last few months, this is surprising to you?
Well, no, it's good. Just exciting, and I think that my whole life, you know, I've been creating music, and I've been performing shows, so I've always felt really successful. I think that's my definition of success. But as my music started to help people,
yeah,
and help, you know, change how people felt and made it more positive, one of my goals was for my music to finally reach as many people as possible. So that's what I'm feeling more. I'm overwhelmed with pride, and I'm just so proud of the fact that people they want to be happier. They want to love themselves. That's the only reason why my music is catching on. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason why Truth Hurts is on the charts right now, because everyone wants to be 100% that bitch. You know what I mean?
Hey, am I 100% that bitch? Can I be that?
Of course you
okay,
are.
Okay, good. So I find this to be so inspiring, because I don't, and I said this earlier, it's part Beyonce, part Oprah. I mean, you're testifying on stage, and you're teaching life lessons. That's got to come from an enormous place of strength and security from you. I wonder if you ever get insecure, if you ever get worried, if you ever get fearful.
Well, I mean, I'm actually learning on... So, yes, thank you. Believe it or not, what I'm saying on stage isn't to people, but it's with people.
Right.
It's conversational. I'm learning new things every night on stage about myself and about how to manage my life better. Like, on this tour, I actually had a really rough start.
Yeah.
Coming straight from Coachella. And I had been beating myself up because of Coachella and the technical difficulties. And then I was sick immediately. And I was just like, oh my God, this sucks. Like, I'm not gonna be good enough. I'm not gonna sing good enough. I feel bad. I wish I could be 100. So I actually was at a pretty low point, and I would have conversations with the crowds in the first few shows and just try to figure out what the fuck was going on. Right. And like, how can I build myself back up from this low point that I was at? And as I was talking to them, I realized that that is a part of it. That's a part of self-love. That's a part of self-care. It's why we do so much self-care, because when we're beating ourselves up and when it's actually not all sunshine and roses, we have this foundation that we've laid down to help pick us back up a little easier. So I found myself able to bounce back from my low point on this tour. That's way awesome. Quicker.
So other than doing therapy on stage with an audience, where do you go for inspiration? Where do you go in the low moments? Who do you turn to? Because, I mean, I just watched 300 people turn to you. And last night in Nashville, I saw, you know, 1,000 people turn to you. Who do you turn to?
Real therapy. My therapist. I'm just kidding.
Shout out to Gail, my girl Gail.
Who? Gail King. Well, you know, I have a really amazing group of people around me that my best friends also tour with me, and they were my best friends
awesome.
Before we toured.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the people who tour with me have become my best friends, from the dancers to my glam team. So we're all on the same path. We all want to be more positive-minded, self-loving, happier people. So when you have a group of people like that around you, there's no way any of that darkness can exist.
Yeah.
They're gonna get rid of that shit so quick. And sometimes, you know, I think it's just communicating, learning how to open up your mouth and just say how you feel,
yeah,
which has been really hard for me,
yeah,
my whole life.
Why?
And I don't know, I think it's because, and I said this last night, like, you know, I was taught to like be very strong and hold back my emotions,
yeah,
to make sure everyone else is comfortable when I was little. And it's a part of being a black woman too. Like, we're so strong, we take so much on,
mm-hmm,
and it's this inherent thing. It's this very innate thing, but then it's also this socially taught thing from young age. So
I was the baby in the family, but I was always the rock and I would hold things down. But the older I get, the more I realize I was repressed and I didn't get to express myself. I didn't get to cry. But if I didn't get to cry, that means I didn't get to really fully love and I didn't get to really fully laugh and really fully be angry. I didn't allow myself the full spectrum of emotions. Yeah. You can't be just safe all the time. And I think that my friends around me allow me to go to those extremes without turning their backs on me, and they embrace that because they know that I'm late to the party. I'm late to the emotions party.
but you're there anyway. That's all that matters. You're at the party. That's all that matters. And that goes into every song that you write. There is a distinct message every time that you seem to not just speak but sing. There's a common thread through it all.
Well, thank you, and it's my voice. That's what it is, and I'm on this journey to find my voice, and I'm on this journey to love myself. And so I think that's
because if you don't love yourself, who will?
Listen, who the hell gonna love you? Can I get an amen? No, I'm just kidding. That's not the same. What does RuPaul say?
You're asking me?
Okay, wait. If you can't love yourself, how the hell you gonna love somebody else? Can I get an amen?
That's right.
That's it, right? Don't put that first part in there where I butchered RuPaul. I'm trying to get back on the show. But exactly. And that was the first half of my messaging. On the coconut oil tours, I would always be like, you need to love yourself and fill yourself up with yourself so that you can be better to the people around you. And that's what I was trying to learn.
Right.
But we're taking it a step further now where it's like, you need to be complete with yourself and be your own soulmate and stop searching for something outside of yourself and stand still in yourself so that you can attract all of that love that is purposed for you. Everything that you deserve, all that good shit that's floating around, that's waiting for you, is attracted to you once you're just in love with yourself.
Well, you might have just now come to the party, but you're billowing through the party. I mean, you're running through it with like a chair almost and swinging it because, I mean, I don't know when you got there, but boy, you're there and it exudes from you. And I think that's the magnetic part of you. Yeah. And that's the reason why we love you so much. So.
Well, I mean, it took my whole life to get to the Met Gala, but I went and I fucking shut that shit down. So I guess it's...
Daniel, the funniest video I've ever seen is walking through the airport with that jacket on. That was great. What was the rental cost for that extra day?
No, that's my coat, my name.
They gave it to you. It's yours. It's officially
Mark Jacobson. It says Lizzo Met Gala 2019.
Do you carry it with you everywhere you go now?
It's literally inside my pussy. It's like a tampon.
Well, I was gonna ask to wear it, but
No, you still can. My pussy juice is delicious. Blame it on my juice. Blame. You know, you was playing the song first.
Yeah, well,
you know
I appreciate
about my juice.
I know about it. By the way, I appreciate it so much. I love you so much. And I said this on stage. You're the best part of the industry. You're the best. You represent everything that's great with humanity. We need so many more of you. So I love you to death.
That's the goal. The goal is to just represent me and so that other people can believe in the me in themselves so that they can do this too.
Well, do it. I love you.
Boy, I really, really wanted to wear that jacket.
I'd like to see you in that jacket.
Would you? That would not be something I'd want the wife of yours to walk in on looking
at. No, that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, we talked about this similar sort of thing in the last episode with the AC guys is how labels and management, how they know, how are they able to predict 6 months out, a year out? Obviously, with her, I mean, you can almost see the energy around her, but still.
Well, look, this is what the manager said to me. When she came to town, she said, we think that we're going to be doing... No. She said, we know we're going to be doing arenas by the end of this tour. Man, that is... I sort of laughed at it.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I love you, Lizzo, but I did not see that coming. They just felt it. They knew it. I think that they built it on the data thing that we were talking about last week with the AC guys. You know, they were seeing how quickly the shows were selling out, what the return on when they came back to a city was, and how they could find almost the exact same group and were seeing the audience expand in a way that... Look, she comes to... That week that she came to Chattanooga and then I interviewed her shortly thereafter, I went to see her in Atlanta just a couple of days later. Barry, it was the Tabernacle, and if you've ever been to the Tabernacle, if you're upstairs, you can basically like see down onto the crowd. I have never in, I don't know, 25 years of going to shows, I have never heard a louder crowd in my life.
Yeah, you came back that next day, and we're talking about, what, 300 white people twerking or whatever the number was.
And it was a couple, yeah. In Chattanooga, yeah, it was about 350.
But let me know at the Tabernacle show.
Oh, it was 1,000. Tabernacle's like 1,000, yeah. So,
and first of all, I got to make fun of you, and then I'll ask you, I'll give you the credit. But we should say that this is the first of what many of Brad's BFF stories that we're probably going to, you know. Yeah,
I'm in a tough spot this year. I'm in a tough spot.
It's fine, and it's my job to, you know,
level me
kneecap
out a little bit
every now and then.
Kneecap me.
Kneecap you. Thanks. Bring you back. Thanks, bring you down.
You're real Corleone. You know that.
Somebody's got to do it, but I mean, to me, this is sort of interesting. Obviously, with hindsight, she's a star. She's a superstar, but no one was playing her before you did. And, you know, I've teased you about you discovered her. She was probably going to be discovered.
She was going to do just fine.
She was going to do just fine.
Yeah.
But what was it? I mean, for, you know, this is sort of inside baseball, but that's what we're here for with this,
sort of what we
with this
here.
Podcast. What was it? I mean, you probably get, same as I do, 100 CDs or pitches or whatever. Yeah. What was it about that one? And why then? And why not, you know, 6 months later, 6 months earlier, whatever.
Well, radio is funny in that most radio stations can't take many chances. They can't go out on limbs and just play whatever they find on a blog and enjoy. I'm in a really lucky situation. I was able to basically craft a radio station however I wanted it, mainly because, you know, we were in a really interesting pocket of the industry in that we weren't owned by a large corporation and local control was basically just me. So if I found something that I really, really liked, I could throw it on and just have fun with it and see what happened. I mean, it's happened with a couple of other artists, but like I said that day on stage, is we took a lot of chances at the radio station, a lot of chances on artists playing a lot of, you know, just nonsense that Brad just happened to like. Now, I'm having to work into a confines of a top 40 format, which means, you know, 95% of this is going to be already dictated to me by what the chart position and, you know, where most streams are coming from and sales are coming from. But there are a few that we've hit. There's a few that we got lucky on. And when we started playing Lizzo, you could just start seeing her pop up in the Spotify locals or the Shazam locals. You could start finding her popping up on the sales charts, where I'll never forget the first week we played her. I mean, you get 1 to 200 on the sales chart, right? Or the stream chart, right. 1 to 200. Out of nowhere, Lizzo Juice was like 112. And I'm not giving her a lot of airplay. It's... you know, some overnights and a couple night tracks. I mean, I maybe played her 10 times, 15 times that first week. And even there, you could see it pop up. Somebody streamed it, somebody bought it in Chattanooga. So then I played it a little bit more the next week, and it went to like 80. From like 120 to 80. And then by the third week, it was in the top 30 of Chattanooga, no matter if it was streamed, no matter if it was sold.
Right.
And then the Shazam, you can narrow down exactly into your market who's Shazamming what. And from the moment we played it, Lizzo was like one of the top 10 Shazam songs of the entire city. And that's what, you know, these guys are looking at on a very small level, right? When they try to find out what's a hit, what's working, and what's not, they use markets like Chattanooga and they use markets around the country that they can, you know, test some things out just to see if they can build a story.
Right.
And then that story, then they can sell to other markets and bigger cities, and hopefully then it becomes a groundswell. We just got lucky. It was going to hit. Now, what happens with Juice is that Juice is such a fun song and such a great song, but, you know, Netflix comes around and they've got this movie that is, you know, it's a chick flick and it is about female empowerment and it's about, you know, girls sort of taking over their life and reowning their life and, you know, Truth Hurts. Finds its place in that movie. Now, Truth Hurts is a song that's 4 years old. You know, but they put it in this Netflix movie and all hell breaks loose. And I'll never forget the call from the label. They called up and they said, hey, we're going to switch singles because what's happening with Truth Hurts is I mean, we can't deny it. We have to go on this right now. So we're going to abandon a single that was top 25, that was moving, and they go to Truth Hurts, all because they saw the data, they started seeing how it was reacting, and they could not hold it back.
Yeah.
And within 12 weeks, it was a number one single.
See, it's interesting how all this dovetails to what our conversations for the last two episodes. I mean, those guys like you, it's their job. Your job every day was to find these kinds of, well, you could have easily just done the market thing, you know, taking what the data said.
Right.
But you had that leeway to do that 5%. And same with Steve and Brian. But it comes with being clued in and on top of things. You know, there is a lot of luck. Like, you know, if they're talking about booking somebody like that a year and a half ago or having it on the radar, that they have to be pretty good at what they're doing, because they couldn't have predicted 3 Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no,
nobody can predict that.
No.
They couldn't have predicted the movie, you know, for a 4-year-old song. That's what I mean. It's that combination of luck, timing, but as you kept pointing out last week, taking advantage of the moment.
Look,
they get it.
Exactly. That's what they said. But again, you know, I don't think anyone of us are under any sort of notion that anybody watched that show when she came to Bonnaroo in whatever year that was, looked at that and said, you know what, she's going to be headlining this festival in a couple of years. I don't know if anybody said that. And, you know, I know it's their job to, you know, say certain things and promote certain things. But I really want to know the truth when I ask them, do you like everything you book? I mean, do you like everything? Like, I know it's the best interest of the festival, but there have got to be some bands you're like, oh, this sucks.
I think they admitted that there were some that don't fall into their, you know, their bailiwick. It's probably not what they listen to.
Their what?
Bailiwick.
Wow. Write that one down, kids. Bailiwick. I have...
Do need to do this quiz.
Is that something I need to get checked out at the doctor?
No. Look
it up. What's a bailiwick?
They're Lane.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll take my bailiwick to Ye Old Town Store. Here's later today.
Like I keep telling you, Brad, read a book. Put the phone down, read a book.
Hang on a second. I'm getting a text message from Bailiwick. It's my friend. His name is...
That would be a good band name.
Yeah.
But they admit, you know, we've heard from some folks that EDM is probably not everybody on that staff's favorite thing. There are some of them that...
Probably why they hire somebody else to do
it. Exactly. And why they probably never even walked by that tent. But they were smart enough to see that was going to be a big demand, and it's done very, very well for them.
Yeah.
That's just one example. There's no way they can like everything. And even you and I have... As we talked about last week, they've earned that trust where I might walk by a show and say, it's not for me, but I can see where it's good, you know, at least where it's honest and well done type of thing. I don't get the feeling. I don't know that I've ever gotten the feeling from seeing a show there that somebody bought their way on that lineup. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't belong, but a favor was owed or a check was written. I never have gotten that feeling.
Well, I mean, you also haven't seen every artist that's ever played.
Fair point. Very
fair. I got to take them at their word when they say they haven't done a favor to put somebody on the lineup. I can't imagine them having to do that in the last few years. I mean, I don't necessarily see them telling me exactly the truth 10 years ago. I mean, they may not even know. They might not even know what favors were called in by a Live Nation or somebody
that's what
like
I was
that.
Say. It's not just always been the two guys. So, yeah, we have no idea. But
so as far as, you know, the Grammys as a whole, what'd you think? What'd you think of the winners as it relates to the Bonnaroo lineup?
I thought it looked good for Bonnaroo. I also felt like, and I don't know how you are, I mean, it's your job with radio, but there are years when I look at the list and say, I don't know any of these people. Never heard of. That didn't happen this year. I felt like
that's interesting. Do you attribute that to strength, or when you say that you know them, is that saying that they were good?
That's a good question. You know, the grumpy old man cynic in me says, yeah, you know, they don't make music like they did when I was, you know, kind of wah wah. That's a good question. I don't really know, because I just thought of that this morning when I was reading back over the list. I was like, I know, you know, of the five or six nominees, there were maybe one or two that I really was not familiar with their music. Mm. And I try, because it's my job, to sort of stay up with it.
Yeah. Well, see, that is one difference between, like, say, me generically and the AC guys. They have to listen to everything.
Right.
I just want to listen to everything. Yeah. I don't really need to. I can very easily do this job and not listen to, you know, most anything. Yeah. You know, I can really zombie my way through this and get a pretty healthy lifestyle. But no, I just choose to. These guys have to. And that's what we were talking about last week, is like, at what point do you just like, I am so done.
Overload, yeah.
Overloaded
well,
with
well,
this
the
stuff.
Other thing is, I mean, you pick on me because I have memory lapses or whatever where I can't remember somebody or think, but... One of my fears as a music writer is, you know, you'll ask me, hey, do you like X, you know, whatever, and you're asking me about a Chinese dish, and I'm thinking it's a musician or vice versa, you know? I don't ever want to be the, oh, yeah, I like that a lot, and then come to find out it's a made-up name.
Yeah. Barry, my favorite new band is Pat Kee Mau. What do you think about
them? I love them, man. They're
love that first album.
Exactly.
Sweet and Sour Chicken. So weird.
I've done it, and I've seen people do it. You know, the inclination is, yeah, I've heard of them. And then you come
is
to find out
weird
it's all
thing?
Made
that
up.
That is such a weird thing that your natural inclination, whenever, because you're in the world that you're in, and I guess I fall prey to this too, is to immediately say, of course I know
sure.
who they are. Of course.
Yeah.
Love them.
Heard
my favorite.
Of them.
And
heard
then I listen
them.
To them, and I'm like, God, that's terrible. Why did I say I like this?
Yeah. At least they exist.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking
kidding.
About.
So, but as far as Bonnaroo people, oh, that's what a question was. I sort of took this in, at least in the industry-wide, I think that the natural consensus was it was a very weak year. And that's why it was able for, you know, certain people to do as well as they were.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. Maybe those years where I hadn't heard of a lot of people is because it was a huge field, whereas this one, maybe it's just a few people. That's a good point.
I kept watching last night thinking Grammy night when we talk about last night. I kept watching, you know, I love Her. I'm a huge Her fan.
Right.
And she was my album of the year vote, my Grammy vote for, you know, 2 years ago. But I was still remarking, like, I kept watching. It's like, how in the world has she not played The Farm yet? How has Her not played the biggest music festival on the planet? And, you know, every time I have thought about the same thing that Steve said maybe 20 times since we've been in Knoxville. When he was talking about them approaching someone, going back and forth with someone and it just not working out, and then at the end of that sentence he slips up and he says, and we'll probably have Her next year.
Yeah, maybe it'll work.
I have been racking my brain to figure out who that would be.
I know. Me too.
I mean, if I'm just spitballing and guessing, I say to myself Lady Gaga, because it's off cycle for her. It wouldn't make sense necessarily, but they would really try to get her on. Would it be a Taylor Swift? That doesn't really make sense. Then I can go to, you know, the rock side and try and find like a. By the way, Bonnie Raitt was great last night.
Yeah.
Tanya Tucker was great last night. Brandi Carlile was great last night. I go on that side of it and see if there's somebody on there that they're trying to talk about. Something has been really bugging me about that sentence.
I agree. I want to say this, and then we can come back to that, but it's so funny. One of the best lines I ever heard was after Steven Tyler, because you texted last night and said, this Aerosmith Run DMC thing is terrible.
That was one of the worst things I've ever
somebody
watched.
Somebody made a comment when he first started judging on the talent show that he looks like a dentist's first ex-wife. I just think that's the best line.
You've been using that for years, haven't you?
It's perfect.
It was unwatchable. And when you say, when you look down the line, you're like, oh, these young people, they don't make music like I had in my day. You know what, young people, kids, if parents have ever said that to you, put on the video of Aerosmith and Run DMC from the 2020 Grammys and walk out of the room. They will never say another word to you about the garbage that you listened to. That was unlistenable last night.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. there's a lot of things that just shouldn't be redone, and that was probably one of them.
Yeah, it just was. It felt like such a
Plus, I don't know how they do it without Jam Master Jay. That just seemed wrong.
But. So then you had they had the big win for Vampire Weekend. You've had Billie Eilish and the Bonnaroo vet that she is at this point. And then when you start looking at the people who win, maybe that's exactly what they're looking at. Maybe they see a Billie Eilish for 2021. Maybe they see a Her for 2021. Maybe they start taking this crop. Maybe Yola, who's a best new artist, and we'll spend an episode later on in the season talking about her, but maybe they take a Yola, and this year she's on what they would call a cafe stage, right, or a Friday early slot, and she turns into something that could get any bigger. But that's the beauty of this whole thing.
Yeah, we didn't really ask them that question specifically, did we? Do they look at things like Grammys? Are they sitting there with a notepad writing down names? Or does it matter? Does it work against an artist? Now your fee bumps up substantially because you have that behind you. I don't know. That's an interesting. I just keep thinking about the timing of it all. That's the part that I can't wrap my head around.
It's hard for you to foresee that long far correct. In the future. You're 16 months away,
yeah.
And you're just like, how are you going to predict the cycle? And this is what my point was to you last week when we did the recap to the behind the scenes part two. That's the part that freaks me out. You're confused by it. It freaks me out that this whole thing, this whole machine might be ran without my input whatsoever as a consumer. That sort of scares me, and it makes me think that some of the things, and it goes back to the Grammy controversy of when she came out and said that the whole thing's rigged, and there's some irregularities that I can even tell you that are weird when it comes to nominating people, and there is a huge political thing when it comes to nominating people, and the even voting in and of itself is strange when you get your ballot. Do you know that you can only vote for a certain amount of categories? You can't vote for all of them. You only get like 10 that you can actually vote in. And
is that, you think, because they don't think anybody has the capacity to be well versed in more than 10?
Or? I think they want to control the mechanism. And and the other thing too is not everybody that's a Grammy voter gets access to the entire ballot. So if you are a classical composer and you have enough credits and you can get you're endorsed and you're in the Grammy voting thing, and then you go to put your vote in, you may not be able to do Best New Artist. You may not be able to vote for Record of the Year, Album of the Year, because it's outside of your sphere.
That's what I'm saying. It makes some sense. Yeah. What does maybe they do? We know a few people, but what does a hip hop fan know about classical music? Best new, Tchaikovsky remake. That makes sense, and vice versa.
But it does cause a lot of problems. I mean, it causes a lot of problems, and it just makes the whole system feel strange.
And maybe that's part of why I'm struggling, and we kept asking Brian and Steve so much about process and how much they know and can plan, is I guess the cynic in me is my whole life I just thought the Grammys were rigged. That's all I've ever heard, that the label buys it, it's preordained.
But this is the political problem we have in this country.
True
enough. They're all terrible. They're all corrupt. So might as well just not trust any of them.
Yeah, because, as a music fan, I would hear an album that I loved that got no awards, no nominations, and then, something that sold a lot of records that was terrible would win.
It is weird that we do awards the way that we do awards on the music side of it, because when you look at the film and the television side of it, when you look at the visual arts, they really pare down the award shows almost to the to the letter. You've got the SAGs that is primarily an acting an Actors Guild thing. You've got the Oscars, which is, for basically ratings and show. You've got a Golden Globes. You got a TV. You got a daytime Emmy. You got a nighttime Emmy. You've got,
right.
They break it down into subgenres, but yet we don't do that with music. Like, give me the Grammy equivalent for something that, or not even the Grammy equivalent, give me the Emmy equivalent in music.
Well, there, you know, there have been those controversies. Who was it? Metallica that won best. What was it they won when they. Or Jethro Tull won best heavy metal band. Remember that? It was.
Rad.
Because they weren't going to give it to whoever else. Somebody was trying to control it. And that's. I guess it's those kinds of things that have always made me feel like, yeah, it's bogus. I mean, they didn't even have an urban or rap award for years. That was a big controversy. But the other side of it, sorry to interrupt, is if it's not popular, why give it an award? You know, I could sort of see that argument. I mean, if something sells 20 million records, are you going to keep it out of at least being nominated? Those are the questions that
I understand.
Struggled
but
with.
this is why I and you give me such hell about this. But this is why I said to you in front of Ashley. In front of Ashley Capps, I said, Ashley, I think that you saved music.
Yeah, all right.
Because I think that what Bonnaroo did...
I give you hell because that was your opening salvo in the bourbon tent.
You know,
that was, hi, I'm Brad.
I like to start big.
Thanks for saving.
I like to start big. I like to leave an impression. No, I think that it created an entire genre of music and allowed artists to exist in a space that didn't require major commercial radio play, major album sales, and major tours. You know, they could survive on just a festival circuit. That is amazing. And Bonnaroo created the ability to have a festival circuit. You know, it's not a Coachella and Lollapalooza. Give me a place where... festivals existed.
You're
Bonnaroo was the
100% right. Live music did not exist outside really of the giant arenas
or the tiny rooms.
The 10,000s, the 12,000s, the 3,000s were going nowhere. It was all hip hop. It was all studio stuff. You know, the bands that actually were getting out and performing live were struggling. They were, you know, living in vans going up and down their circuit. I totally agree that Bonnaroo, in my own, I've said this many, many times, I was stuck in that rut. I mean, I was tired of going to our arena and seeing the same show, whether it was a hair band or a country right. band, or it was the same show.
Right.
And that second or third year coming back from Bonnaroo and realizing, man, I just saw 20 bands that I, you know, 15 of them I would not have seen right. or heard of before because they don't sell records. They don't appear on any of our local radio stations for whatever reason. It just completely re-energized. And not just me, obviously. A lot of people, the discovery thing became new again. You know what I mean? Bonnaroo, for me, became, I don't know... however many bands on this lineup, and that's the best part. That's right. What I'm excited about.
Right, but now we live in a culture that if I don't know all of them, then the lineup must suck.
Right.
Okay.
Well, sort of. That's why you and I started this podcast. I think because it's not just us, we hear it on Reddit and the other people who've reached out to us, that's what they love. Now it's become cool to discover a band.
Yeah.
You know, not just have your favorite and not just be that kid on your block whose favorite band is, you know, somebody nobody else has heard of. Now it's, guess what I just discovered and right. share it. And that's a huge difference that did not exist 20 years ago.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Bonnaroo's broken my heart in January before. You know, when that first year when I was so into Frank Ocean and Channel Orange, not booking... Frank broke my heart. Not getting Lana Del Rey early sort of broke my heart. Not getting, you know, when my favorite singer-songwriter on the planet, James Vincent McMorrow, not getting him the year that I wanted him, but getting him the year after. I mean, but it brings me back every time when, just like you said, we go to a show like Davey or we go to the Warren Treaty and we're pulled right back in. We find all of these artists that then we're stuck with that we're in love with for the, you know, for the rest of life,
yeah,
essentially.
I really, really wanted Billie Eilish this year up there. You know, ever since you mentioned her too, I was like, who? And then I went and I'm obsessed with watching the YouTube videos with her and her interviews and the Hot Ones episode she did. I just like her. So I would have not had that opportunity, would not have discovered that, and to be able to see her live in a place like Bonnaroo is what keeps me coming back.
And the commercial world had to catch up to what the festival circuit was doing. I mean, now it's a given. You're going to find a Vampire Weekend that's on the Grammys now. You're going to find the National. Hey Ma was nominated for Record of the Year. Bon Iver has been nominated now 2 records in a row for Album of the Year. You know, does that happen without a festival circuit that he can exist on? Because, look, even alternative radio ain't playing much Bon Iver.
Right.
You know, and the stations that are playing Bon Iver, you know, you're looking at, like, really, really, really niche radio stations. But because of the festival circuit, they're opening up you to so many places and so many artists that you can, you know, then see again in the next festival that you travel to, and then the next one, and then Bonnaroo 2 years later.
I don't know where we heard it, but most people now discover new music via YouTube. I saw that somewhere.
Is that the stat? Is that where it's happening now?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's not me, but not most people.
No, but I think it's part of that sort of works hand in hand, is they're not relying on, forgive me for saying it, a you to tell them what to listen to. To me, that is a huge leap that Bonnaroo and then festivals that came after it have created. The idea of, I'm more interested in discovering new music than
I know that that's what
showing
you say.
How cool I am, because me and 20 other people.
Well, I know that's what
people.
You say, but that's not what Steve and Brian would explain their mission as to be. They are not looking to be a music curator for you. I think that they want to serve you the things that would make your experience the best one possible. And I don't know if I would... I don't know. If I would have asked them that question, I think they would have pushed back on me, because they're not scared of doing that, by the way. I noticed.
No.
But they would have pushed back and said, no. We're not trying to get you to discover anything. We're not going to take advantage of your... We're not going to assume your intelligence on this.
Well,
that
was the point I was asking when I asked what the mission was. And if you remember, the first answer was to sell tickets. I don't discount that at all. I mean... You know, no money, no mission. If they don't sell tickets, they don't get to do next year's lineup. They don't get to curate that kind of thing. And, you know, going back to the point that this is what they do all day, I almost could see it where it's difficult for them to say, I'm going to introduce you to this person because they've already listened to it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It'd be hard for them to look down a list and say, nobody knows this one, this one, this one. And to your point, and I think you're 100% right, if they just loaded it up with, these are the bands we think you should be listening to,
yeah,
versus these are the bands you have indicated you think you want,
right?
That is completely different.
Right.
I agree with that. Yeah, that's you know, just in my line of work, whenever a new restaurant opens and the person says, we're going to educate the public about this food.
Bye.
Go ahead and give me your check.
Yeah.
They're a ball bat and I'll beat you on the head and we'll both be happy. Yeah, it ain't going to work.
Yeah.
That doesn't work for anybody.
This has been a phenomenal chat. We've got some Patreons that we want to thank. They're going to go through the screen there. And again, there's a lot of them, and we appreciate every one of you. And we appreciate you just for listening on the whatpodcast.com or any of your audio devices.
Do we need to thank the Moxie?
Yeah, you can thank the Moxie, sure.
Thank the Moxie for letting us do this here.
Yeah, as long as they don't run my credit card, I'm fine.
World headquarters.
Yeah, the world headquarters. Yeah,
thank you very much to the Patreons. And not just for signing up, but for engaging. I mean, some of the dialogue we've had back and forth, it's a lot of fun.
One of the great perks of being a Patreon is that you get a specialized chat room where we basically just make jokes about Barry. It's very exciting.
As if they couldn't do that elsewhere.
I know, but now we get to laugh amongst each other.
Yeah, now it's official or something.
Plus all kinds of other things. It's going to, we're going to, I guess, going to adjust the Patreon level here soon. So get in while you can in the next few days. Other than that, we appreciate you. The whatpodcast.com. It's Barry Corder. I'm Brad Steiner. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Hey. How y'all feeling?
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year? That matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.